It is a state capitol report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. As state lawmakers wrap up a floor period and send bills to Governor Tony Evers' desk, we get up to speed on legislation moving through the two houses with Wisconsin Public Radio's state capitol reporter Anya Van Wagtendonk. Call in with a question, share comments along the way, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Anya, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So starting with the Brewers, the legislature approves a plan Tuesday to spend nearly $500 million to repair American Family Field over the next 3 decades, keeping the Brewers in Milwaukee. State and local taxpayer funding for the plan has been a point of contention. Where did the mix of funding sources ultimately land?
Yeah, there has been a lot of back and forth, but the final setup is that the state will pay about $387 million. The city and county of Milwaukee will pay a combined about $135 million, and then the team will pay $110 million. And then there was kind of a late change so that there's now going to be a ticket surcharge on non-Brewer events, so things like concerts, and that's going to start at $2 for most tickets and start at $8 for luxury box tickets.
Among in that back and forth, what came up as a place where you could see the bipartisanship at work, the collaboration? Was it the entry with the ticket surcharge? Where did the support ultimately coalesce?
Yeah, there was back and forth about the responsibility of the city and county of Milwaukee. The argument there was that, you know, they foot much of the bill, so they should have a little bit more say. And so they were able to get a couple members on the board that brought on some Democratic support. But there was actually bipartisan support and opposition. And so some of the bipartisan opposition was that there was not sufficient concessions from the team, from the Brewers themselves, alongside this kind of significant public funding. So we saw both sides kind of uniting on both sides of the issue.
Examining the team side, legislators opposing the plan, they worried the state has failed to secure enough insurances or concessions from the Brewers. What are the Brewers agreeing to in the plan?
Yeah, pretty simply, they are agreeing to stay put until 2050. But as you say, there was this pushback from some Republicans and Democrats saying that they should have gotten more. And one of the big criticisms is that, you know, there's no guarantee that they won't come back in X number of years and ask for more money. All this says is that they cannot relocate before 2050.
Republican State Senator Rob Coles of Green Bay voted against this plan, and Coles said he wants a review of the Brewers' finances by state auditors prior to authorizing the funding. How are supporters of the plan explaining their position given the financial resources of the Brewers and Major League Baseball?
Yeah, essentially they say, you know, this is an investment in a property that the state already owns and that they lease to this team, and so that there will be a return on that investment. So there's the income tax revenue from Brewers players and employees, sales tax revenue, obviously, from the stadium. They point to jobs that are generated by the stadium itself and that will be generated by these improvement plans. And so essentially they say that all of this will pay off and continues to pay off, that the Brewers are a major economic driver currently and will continue to be so.
Yes, those words, Governor Evers calling the plan and the Brewers a critical economic driver. The legislation would grow the board, as you mentioned, that oversees the stadium to 13 members. A majority of the board would be appointed by the governor. How significant is this change in the stadium's management?
Yeah, so that's actually another argument, right, that supporters of this plan make, is that the money doesn't go to the Brewers itself or to the, you know, quite wealthy owners, but to the baseball park district that manages the facility, and then they sign off on every taxpayer dollar that gets spent. And so there was a lot of back and forth about how that board is structured, and the kind of final makeup is that there are 6 people from appointed by the legislature, 6 appointed by the governor, and then 1 that is brought forward by the Brewers and then ultimately approved by the governor. And as I mentioned, two of the governor's picks would be brought to him by Milwaukee leaders. And so that's significant because the governor's picks would not have to be approved by the legislature. So especially in this very divided government that we live under, Republicans hold the legislature quite firmly, but this gives Democrats a little bit more power in Milwaukee, a little bit more power, obviously, as long as there is a Democratic governor.
You mentioned there was bipartisan negotiation here. We saw lawmakers actively talking and collaborating on this plan. Do you think that bodes well as we go forward?
I would love to be optimistic in that way. I will say this is one of the kind of rare moments when Democratic participation in a legislative process was actually critical to getting something over the finish line. I think many issues that come forward just don't have that type of, they're much more divided by party. And so I don't think most issues have that kind of impetus for bipartisan action. We will see, but this is sort of a, I think, more of a special circumstance than a sign that bipartisanship is on the rise here in Wisconsin.
We're talking about state politics after the legislature's last scheduled floor period of 2023, the fall floor period. Anya Van Wagtendonk, our guide, WPR's State Capitol reporter. You can join in with your questions, your comments, the legislation you're watching along the way. The number to join in is 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Anya, let's take a call now. Jack in Madison is here. Jack, what is your question?
Good morning. So I was overhearing you guys talk about American Family Field and the Brewers and the decision to keep them in Milwaukee for the long term. And I wondered what the role of ownership was. And I overheard Anya talking about how wealthy the Brewers owners are and just sort of what they've been doing or what they can do to keep the Brewers in Milwaukee to kind of take the pressure off the legislature and the Wisconsin taxpayer, if that makes sense.
Jack, thank you. What do the owners bring to the table, Anya?
Yeah, I mean, so this deal, you know, as I just mentioned, is more or less set. And Governor Evers, as you mentioned, is going to sign it. The owners never explicitly said that they were going to leave Milwaukee. And so there wasn't really that kind of explicit threat. But I think part of the narrative was that there were, you know, other cities that were interested. That's what some legislators have said. And so, and the Brewers are a very small market. And so I think that there was just some concern about wanting to kind of like sweeten the pot and, you know, guarantee that the baseball franchise stays in Milwaukee.
Jack, thanks for the question. Turning to gig workers now, Anya, Wisconsin gig workers would be designated as independent contractors under a proposal by Republican lawmakers. Pew Research estimating one in every six people have done gig work. What would the designation mean for workers and employers?
Yeah, so determining how to classify gig workers has been this ongoing debate for basically as long as these apps have been on our phones. This proposal would affect drivers specifically. So that's, you know, rideshare operators for Uber and Lyft, and then also drivers for delivery apps like DoorDash, Uber Eats, Instacart, things like that. And so essentially what this says is that those types of drivers are independent contractors, and that means that they can set their own hours, they can work for multiple competing apps, they can just sort of generally decide how and where and when to work. And then in exchange, they don't get certain benefits and protections that are for full-time employees. So like overtime pay, unemployment insurance, or workers' comp if they get hurt on the job.
Does that leave them exposed? What is in it for gig workers to have this designation?
Yeah, so critics of bills like this say that it does leave them exposed, that it allows them to be exploited, to sort of not have those, you know, kind of basic labor protections. What supporters say is that it gives them flexibility, that not every gig worker is a full-time gig worker, that it's something that people do on the side while they're going to school or working another job or in retirement for a little bit of part-time income. And so that taking away that flexibility would require a completely different kind of relationship to, let's say, picking up shifts on a Saturday from time to time, that kind of thing. And so it's about giving, they say it's about giving workers that flexibility.
And you note there is some discussion about a portable benefit account in this legislation. What would that do?
Yeah, that's a kind of interesting newer thing that's arising in this conversation, because so much of that push-pull is around things like health insurance, retirement benefits, and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so this would basically be a standalone account that companies and workers could pay into according to certain eligibility standards that the worker could then pull out of for things like retirement benefits or health insurance, or to take time off if they do need to recover from an illness or an injury, because they would not be getting those things, you know, the way a sort of traditional full-time employee would.
So classification of gig workers, this is a topic of debate here in Wisconsin, but also nationally, national policymakers working on this. Is the Wisconsin proposal in line with standards being considered by the federal government?
Yeah, so it's very much been a battle at the federal government. There were certain standards put in place under the Obama administration, and then during the Trump administration, those workers were considered independent contractors, as is being proposed here. Last year, the Biden administration attempted to roll that back in a certain way, so that Department of Labor kind of issued this proposed rule saying that they should be treated more like employees and have access to things like the minimum wage or a minimum wage protection over time, things like that. So the Wisconsin proposal obviously needs to follow federal fair labor standards. That's mm-hmm. how the law works. But the distinction is sort of around who is included in which portions of state and federal employment law. So it gets kind of thorny. But essentially, this bill seeks to define what a gig worker is here in Wisconsin and then set those state standards. And it's interesting. I mean, this is a very clearly like a state by state strategy that these tech companies have. And so there were lobbyists who appeared remotely at a hearing recently, and they've been appearing at state legislature after state legislature. So I think this is, you know, clearly kind of part of that legislative strategy on their part.
Anya Van Wagtendonk is WPR's state capitol reporter. Our guide to helping us get up to speed on legislation advancing this floor period and headed to Governor Tony Evers' desk. You can join the discussion about bills. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. This is the state capitol report. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As the fall floor period comes to a close, we get takeaways. We track legislation with Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter Anya Van Wagtendonk. And you can be part of the discussion about the proposals you're following. Call in with a question. Share what's on your mind. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Anya, looking at this workforce legislation, 2 months ago, Governor Evers calling a special session urging the legislature to pass workforce development measures. And then on Tuesday, Republican lawmakers advance their own version of a workforce bill. What stands out in this legislation?
Yeah, it's very focused on tax cuts and credits, which is a top priority of this Republican legislature. So there was a version of the tax cut that they had included in the state budget earlier this year and that Evers vetoed. And then a central theme of the Evers bill had been childcare. His proposal had been to put sort of money into the provider side of things through subsidies. And then the Republican version of addressing childcare was more of a tax credit-based system for some families. So there were some thematic similarities, but the approaches were very different. There were also a couple other priorities in there around changing professional credentialing processes and imposing new requirements on collecting unemployment insurance.
So how different are the measures backed by Democrats and the governor versus what Republicans want to do?
Yeah, it's night and day. Governor had, he'd asked for a paid family leave program, funding for a new engineering building at UW, a couple of other kind of spending programs like that. None of that was included. As I mentioned, Evers has already vetoed the tax cut. So there's basically no common ground between these two bills, which means that Evers is almost certainly going to just veto it. And we are back to square one.
When I looked at how different some of the things in this bill are from one another, I just thought, could some of these items have gotten through and signed if they were had been like standalone measures and not part of a larger bill?
That's a good question. I think some of the items that are in there, like the changes to the credentialing process that has been a subject of some, sort of actual conversations across party lines. So I think that's possible. Part of the Democratic criticism of the bill was that it just essentially wasn't serious, that it just didn't kind of engage with these concerns about, for example, childcare access in a kind of serious way, because Republicans knew that the governor was just going to veto it. So it is possible that some of these could get floated as standalone pieces of legislation. And we'll see. The tax cut was itself floated as a standalone piece of legislation. So it's certainly possible. But I think that this was kind of a way of, engaging with the special session bill, sending it to committee and going through that process, but then ultimately kind of requesting a very sort of different set of priorities.
Talking about state politics after the last scheduled floor period of 2023, Anya Van Wagtendonk is WPR's state capitol reporter. You can join in with your questions and comments about legislation, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Sharon in Hales Corners. Sharon, hi. What's on your mind?
I'm curious about the status of legalizing cannabis in the state.
And are you looking at the medical cannabis or recreational? What specifically legislation are you following?
Both. I'm a medical patient myself and need to drive to Illinois. I know that Illinois is enjoying a lot of tax revenue that comes with primarily the recreational side, but I'm curious about the status of both recreational and medical in the state.
Sharon, thank you so much for the call. Anya, is there any movement on legalizing marijuana as you watch the legislature?
Yeah, so as I understand it, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who essentially sets the agenda, has made very clear that under his leadership, there will not be recreational marijuana in the state of Wisconsin. And so, as the caller mentions, every surrounding state around Wisconsin does have some form of legalized cannabis. Wisconsin currently is an island, and I think ongoingly will be sort of an island in that. There has been conversation, bipartisan conversation, around very, very limited medical usage. So Democrats kind of, as a party, and Governor Evers have said that they would like medical and recreational use. I think that most likely what we could expect is some kind of proposal around that limited medical usage, but nothing has been proposed this session. That's something to keep an eye on for when lawmakers come back in the new year.
Sharon, thanks for the call. Let's turn to elections. Lawmakers proposing a number of election and voting related bills this session, including related to processing absentee ballots and voting in assisted care facilities. What kind of changes are being proposed in election administration?
Yeah, there are almost a dozen on the table by my count, and that includes both bills and then constitutional amendments, which are things that will go before voters, some potentially as early as the spring. The biggest one, I think, might be allowing some clerks to start processing absentee ballots before Election Day. Currently, that process can't start until the morning of, which means that in cities like Milwaukee with larger populations, voting totals aren't often known until very late at night. And listeners may remember that that helped fuel conspiracy theories in 2020, Trump allies sort of accusing Milwaukee officials of dumping votes in the middle of the night when it was just sort of a question of not being able to process the huge number of absentee ballots in a timely fashion. Mm. So Governor Tony Evers has actually said that he would sign that proposal. And then there's other proposals around for example, the distance between election observers and people counting ballots, a wide range of proposals on the table.
One proposal that passed the assembly waiting action by the Senate would change voting access for people in assisted care facilities. What is happening there?
Yeah, so that was another big challenge during the 2020 election. Special voting deputies get sent into nursing homes to help people who can't come out and vote in person. That process was suspended in 2020 because of COVID, and again, kind of led to some arguments that this allowed people who should not legally have been able to vote to cast ballots. Election officials contest that, especially sort of in the context of the 2020 measures, but reviews have found that some number of voters who have had their voting rights taken away for reasons of mental competency have cast ballots in the past. And there's not a really sort of centralized system for keeping track of those types of voters. So what this proposal would do is just alert families of people who live in those types of facilities when the special voting deputy is coming in. And the idea is, you know, families could sort of provide that check if they know that a loved one has sort of lost their voting rights for reasons of mental capacity, that's just sort of like a check on the system.
Okay, we'll be watching that one. In our last 30 seconds together, the legislature wrapping up the last scheduled floor period. When will lawmakers likely convene again?
They are scheduled to come back in mid-January.
And what do you suspect will be their agenda to address?
Yeah, great question. There's a couple of pieces of outstanding legislation that have passed one chamber but not the other. So I'm paying attention to things like PFAS, some education issues. There's this ongoing battle around diversity funding at UW campuses and a proposed raise for UW employees. And then I'm also curious how they'll be responding to some of the major cases that are coming before the Supreme Court.
Yeah, the Supreme Court as well in the litigation there, because it seems that the legislation and some Supreme Court issues certainly related. Anya, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Anya Van Wagtendonk is WPR's State Capitol reporter, and you can see more of Anya's reporting and State Capitol coverage at WPR.org. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.